Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Fides Club. This is episode 73B. It's a follow-up to the Brexit episode where we're going to be talking to someone from the Leave camp. Ooh, exciting. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Fides Club. This is a kind of a bonus episode that's a follow-up to the one we just had a couple of weeks ago. We discussed the Brexit quite extensively, and a few of you, I'm going to introduce my guest in a couple of minutes, but before I do, I'd like to explain what we're going to try and achieve with this episode. So a few people noted, rightfully so, I think, that we were very one-sided on the previous episode. And I don't think we represented the views of the Leavers camp quite at all. And I was expecting to get some reactions and some negative reactions. And certainly there were a couple of people who sent the kind of emails that I was expecting, which were a little bit too angry for me to react to rationally. But the vast majority of people who responded on Twitter or on the site or elsewhere were, I will admit, that's a fault on my part, I think, but were surprisingly collected and surprisingly constructive, and saying that they were disappointed in the fact that we didn't have a Leavers view, and that you know, they appreciate the show, they appreciate what we did, but they would have liked to have some the other side's opinion. Even though I do think that I tried to play that not devil's advocate, that's derogatory, but the other side arguments. Clearly, I don't personally believe it was the right choice to leave the EU, so it wasn't genuine. So I think that's pretty clear. The other issue, I think, was the characterization we did of the Leavers camp as Gita was very emotional, and she described the camp as mostly racist, which I want to say up front, I really think that there is some xenophobia at play in some of the people who voted there. Just like some protest votes throughout Europe are, you know, going to the right-wing parties and being fueled by some xenophobia. So I don't want to say, I think that's a visible element of it. And I'm sure some of the people voting leave are represented in the views we expressed. But a lot of people, as I said, did want to express the fact that it didn't represent everyone, and in their views, it didn't represent them at all. And I think that's a fair assessment. And so I went ahead and made a little bit more of an effort to try and get people. I contacted a number of people, and I have to tell you, it's hard to get people, maybe specifically in that issue, to come on the show and discuss this. So I asked a bunch of them, and I'm not trying to fault anyone. I think it's a very difficult thing to come on a show and speak publicly, especially about a topic that is as hotly debated about as this one. But yeah, I just want to say that it's not easy. However, thankfully, and thank you for waiting so patiently, Hayden. Thankfully, Hayden said that he would be okay with coming on the show and explaining what, in his view, was a lot of the reasons for people voting leave. So that's the point where I introduce the guest. Hayden, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's
It's a bit nerve-wracking, but I'll do my best to put a side across that is slightly different to what we heard before.
Yeah, I'm really thankful that you're willing to do it, because I completely understand it's not an easy exercise. I mean, the people who are on the show usually are people who are used to speaking publicly, used to podcasting, all of this. So it's not easy. So really, very sincerely, I want to thank you for this. The other thing I want to say before we start talking about the Brexit thing specifically is you're sort of in a peculiar situation, because you don't live in the UK and you haven't lived in the UK for a while, right?
Correct. 5 years now.
So I think in that sense, you're kind of, this is the first challenge to the image that we have about, the Brexit voters, the leavers, let's call them the leavers. You have an international background, highly educated. You're definitely not the image that we have of poor countryside older people. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself? So not too much, but so people know where you're coming from, where you are, who you are.
Sure. So I'm, as I said, currently from originally from the UK. I've worked in New York and I currently live in Singapore. I've been living for 5 years with my family. We moved out here for my job, which is in IT and working for the bank in banks.
So go ahead.
No, sorry, that's fine.
So you really have an almost like a collected opinion on this, and you were telling me you're clearly on the leave side of the issue. You mentioned you didn't vote because you felt like it wasn't, you know, you're not planning on going back to the UK, so it wouldn't have been fair, I guess, for you to cast a vote there.
Correct.
Which I think is an admirable way to do it.
Well, yeah, so we like Singapore. We got no intention of returning to the UK, so for me to make a vote on something that affects the UK in the way it will, I didn't particularly think that'd be. So I know my one vote wouldn't have swayed it, but I didn't think it would be right to vote on something that me or my children may have no impact on, regardless of my personal opinion on the matter.
Right. And just to be clear, I mean, you're living in Singapore, but you're very much involved in, follow the news, you speak with people, you have family in the UK, so it's not like you're completely removed from the situation. We're going to talk about the actual issues and the actual views, hopefully, of how you see the issue of the left, the leaving of the EU. So, all right, let's dive into it. I guess I'm going to ask a few questions and feel free to expand as much as you want, but the simplest one, the easiest one, is you don't feel that we represented at least your views, and as I said, many people said that, in reasoning, in wanting to leave the EU. So what was your views, your reasoning, your reasons?
Well, I thought the began after the vote was that it was all about immigration, and that was the primary issue. I don't believe that's the case. I'm not saying it wasn't an issue, it was, but I think sovereignty was the biggest thing for most people who voted leave. Now that's admittedly from a lot of personal anecdote, but this is something that back when I was a bit of a politics geek, when I was 15 or 16, to be about 92, that was the issue then regarding the EU, and that's the issue that whenever the EU has come up has been the main thing that people have talked about ever since. From my, that's my world, my circle. But my circle, I think, is reasonably broad. So I was, I was brought up on what would be called a working class, in a working class background. Like my father was a builder, my mother was a secretary. So I've heard from that aspect. I now work in banking with highly educated people, even more educated than myself. So I've heard that viewpoint, which is highly skewed the other way. My personal view regarding the EU is a sovereignty issue. I believe that the UK, being part of the EU, loses some of its sovereignty. So, you know, its voting rights are over issues that affect it are diluted. I think it's about 17%, say, in the direction of the EU in terms of voting. You know, the various rules and regulations that are put in place may not be the best for the UK. They may be good for Europe as the EU as a whole, but they won't necessarily be good for the UK. And I'm of the opinion that taking back that sovereignty that's been pulled of the EU will allow the UK to be more flexible and responsive to its own needs rather than the needs of the EU.
So this is one of the things that I honestly don't really understand. I mean, the sovereignty specifically, it's just an issue. There are lots of ways, every country in Europe is making, a lot of its own decisions. There is some respects in which the EU supersedes it, but my impression is that it mostly has to do with the single market. And the single market includes the it's not just that, but the main problem that is pointed to when... So actually, let me tell you, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I've watched the Brexit movie on YouTube, which is kind of ridiculous. It's kind of a YouTuber's conspiracy, they're all out to... Have you seen the Brexit movie on YouTube?
I have not, no.
Okay.
It's not something I...
Because it might be just a very small minority of people that think like that, but it self-aggrandizes the UK and talks about how in the modern world the sovereignty, it talks about sovereignty a lot, but sovereignty has been taken away from what was the great British Empire. And if only we weren't part of the EU, we could be so much greater and we could go back to what that forgotten time when we were actually awesome, when now we have issues here, there, and there's this ridiculous long list of regulations for your pillows and for your coffee and for your, you know, these kinds of things. I don't understand how getting out of the you know, what would that sovereignty bring back? Maybe because you don't even have the common currency. So even the fiscal, the monetary policy, you can do independently as opposed to the other countries in the EU. You have the most exceptions from the EU rules already. How would that all of a sudden make it, how much do you think it would make it better, and would it outweigh the benefits that you're getting from the EU? I mean, clearly you think it does, but I don't understand how sovereignty is such an important... sorry, I'm sort of rambling already. I feel it's been blown out of proportion. Clearly you don't, but what would it make better?
Well, there are certain things that, you know, the UK, I think any country, but I'm speaking just from the UK, any country needs, in my opinion, to be able to make the decisions. So, in a democracy, I believe that the electorate should be the politicians should be directly people. The EU dilutes that. So the UK, for instance, there are certain rules that, you know, have been agreed upon, the UK being part of the agreement process, that don't benefit the UK. So, for instance, not being able to make its own trade agreements outside the EU. That to me is a valuable thing. I think Asia is a growing part of world GDP compared to the EU, which is a shrinking in terms of global GDP. I think being able to look to the rest of the world and trade with the rest of the world on agreements that the UK would get for their own benefit as best they could, rather than being part of a collective trade agreement, that sort of sovereignty, being able to choose how and when you trade with who you want and when you want, is lost by being part of the EU.
All right, I think that's fair. But wouldn't you be able to say this about pretty much any type of common organization? I mean, if when the UK, the people in I don't know, London could say, well, our democratic representation is being diluted by being part of the of England. Or people in Northern England could say, we don't want to be part of England because our democracy is not as strong, because other people who are not living here are telling us what to do. Actually, Scotland is saying, bugger off, we don't want to be part of this. And it's sort of difficult to reconcile this idea that on a theoretical level, if you take everything out of the conversation, yes, taking being part of a union is going to take away some of your direct accountability and influence over the entire union. But that's the same for every type of union.
I agree.
Yeah. So what makes
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So with regards to Scotland, I think I'm personally a proponent of decentralization. So if Scotland feel they'd be better as a country in their own right, then I'm in favour of Scotland leaving the United Kingdom. It's not something that's a pressing issue to me. I think people should be able to self-determine as much as possible.
But that's enormous. That's huge. Like you would, this is an emotional thing, but you would be okay with the UK dislocating, complete like breaking apart
personally,
for this?
Personally, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I don't think that's the most people wouldn't want that. But personally, if Scotland felt they wanted, to be independent, I don't think anyone else has a right to stand in their way.
All right, so let's push it to the extreme then, to the absurd extreme. What if London said, and this is just, I'm teasing you, but what if London
said...
There's
already a referendum on it.
It's not gonna go anywhere. But and by the way, Theresa May, who's been who's the new prime minister, has done a really great job in her last speeches of saying, "All right, I wasn't for it, but now it's gonna happen. The Brexit is gonna happen. Brexit means Brexit, and we're gonna try and do the best we can for this. And now is the time to unite the country, and we're gonna be a strong country." And I think it was a great, great speech. However, if London wanted to leave, I mean, in France, we have the same issues with some independence. And obviously in Spain, they have some independence. It makes the unions a lot weaker. And if London wanted to say, well, we didn't want to leave, we're going to form our own country. Again, this is absurd, but how would you react to that?
Well, to be consistent, I'd say fair enough. I don't think that would ever happen. I don't. It's not something I actually imagine they would actually want to do. But truly consistent, which I hopefully am. If the London want to split off or Wales want to split off, they can do it. I don't think it would go that far. Mm. I personally believe smaller. I don't know the correct size. I'm not claiming to know the correct size, but smaller countries are more nimble and better able to compete in terms of what they can do to attract business. So, for instance, use their tax system. So if Scotland want to break off and run their country a different way, and then and have lower tax to encourage, well, Ireland did with their corporation tax, or the UK constantly does with its tax to try and bring people in, bring business in, or Singapore does, or Hong Kong does. These small countries have nothing very well. Yeah, and then you've got the UK, which has a lot more and could possibly. I don't pretend to see the future, but there's no reason the UK, I don't think, couldn't do well. There will be pain from leaving the EU, but in the long term, I believe that the UK will benefit as a whole.
Okay. So yeah. The Ireland that you're talking about is part of the EU, and they do have leverage on, they can decide what they do with their taxes. So you don't have to be to exit it to have that kind of influence on the way you run your country.
There's other things. VAT is a small example. There are bands where VAT cannot be put below a certain threshold to EU rules. Like, I believe it's 15% is the lowest it can be taken. You know, the UK could, if it wants to, abolish that, you know, if it, outside of the and that, for instance, will give it a, you know, in terms of if we want to boost consumption spending in the UK to goose the economy, then that's what you want to do. I'm not saying that the UK will do these things, but it can't do these things in the EU, and you know, there's certain rules it has to follow that make it less flexible.
All right, I guess it's fair. I mean, it's very clear that obviously it's absolutely obvious. If the UK was outside of the EU, it would have more power on deciding what it wants to do with its regulations, laws, taxes, all of this. That I'm if we bring it down to the basic level, it's very hard to deny. I think what makes it difficult to understand is that it's very obvious for everyone who is not voting leave, who didn't vote leave, that you're still better off with staying in that union, and the benefits from it are a lot larger than the benefits that you have from being alone. And the biggest benefit of all, which I think has been discussed at length, is this thing we were talking about, the single market, the free market in the EU. There's a lot of people who are saying you can't be part of the EU if you are not, I mean, part of the single market, if you don't have free movement of goods and services and people. And I mean, it comes back to the question of immigration, I think, in a way, but is that something that is that you would like to have more regulated, the restricting the free movement of people? Because everyone, I think, wants the free movement of goods and services. I'm guessing you want that too, right? Maybe you don't.
Me personally, I don't want a restriction on immigration. That's not I understand how I benefit from immigration from wherever. A number of people don't, and I understand how they don't benefit and how it works against them. And I understand on a national level, the freedom of people will make the country net richer, but that additional wealth is highly skewed. It's not evenly distributed between, you know, the citizens of the UK. It tends to go to the well-educated, the Londons, the Manchesters, the places that basically voted Remain. Whereas the low-skilled, poorly educated cannot compete with a skilled, productive European citizen who comes in to, you know, to be given a job, to take a job. So there's no way that, you know, that's not the EU's fault. The fact that there's a low-skilled population in the UK has nothing to do with the EU. That's to do with successive governments for the past however many years. But that doesn't stop the fact that at this moment in time, there are a whole swathe of people who are low skilled and cannot compete with a highly skilled, you know, the relatively higher skilled, educated European citizen who can come in and will happily work for, you know, say the not everyone, most work for a higher than minimum wage, but you know, if you do have people who can come in and take a minimum wage job or do a minimum wage job, and these people cannot compete, even if they would agree to work for minimum wage. There's no way they can compete because they're not as skilled, they're not as valuable, or productive worker.
So those people who voted for whom immigration, we're trying to talk about things that are, you know, outside of your specific opinions, but those people who voted leave because they thought maybe they're, you know, they don't have to be racists. I'm not saying they're xenophobic, but they're seeing, I think that's something we mentioned, they're seeing people come in and work, do the same work they do, maybe better for a lower pay. I think for them, immigration would be an issue, would be something they would like to control more, right? So,
completely agree.
Yeah. So do you think they're going to be able to get that? Because, again, there's no way Europe is going to say, all right, that's fine, you can have free movement of goods and services, but people, they're going to be stopped at the border. I don't think they're ever going to get what they wanted when they voted leave, are they? Or am I misrepresenting this situation?
No. anything's possible, right? In the negotiations, anything can happen. Politicians will bend as bend to what they need to do to stay in power. But I can't see a situation where the UK gets full access to the single market and without freedom of movement. I can't see that. That would undermine the EU, I think, too much. I don't think that.
All right. So given that, if you want to
go for it.
There's been a lot of discussions in last episode as well about the deception of the campaign, the Leave campaign. And I'm sure, people have been saying there was lying on both camps. And that's what led me to the conclusion that the problem is how to make reality matter, how to make what is actually true have any kind of importance when everyone's just saying whatever they want and the truth doesn't hold sway over what people say. Because in this case, I think we both agree, it's very, very, very unlikely that immigration is going to become controlled by the UK. And that was one of the messages that was, put forward by the Leave camp. And it feels like a lot of the people who went and voted were deceived, were simply deceived. Is that true? Or,
well, there was deception, yes. Both sides were guilty of it, in my opinion. I don't actually think the EU is going to get access to the single market. I think the immigration thing will override, and they will not accept
the UK
single market. The UK, sorry, the UK will take. They won't. I think the immigration thing will have to be part of
negotiate.
What they can control. Mm. They need to be able to control it. Now, if they can't negotiate that with the EU, I think something will come along. I don't know what, but I've no idea. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they didn't get full access to the single market, primarily so they can control the immigration.
So you think immigration
I don't know for sure. That's a personal opinion.
Yeah. No, clearly, because that's something I hadn't really considered. I thought the single market is so important that the EU is not going to cave. And so the UK, I don't see how the UK could exit the single market. I mean, clearly the Germans and many others are selling lots in the UK. But so you're thinking it's possible that they're going to do what they were saying, which is negotiate trade deals individually, maybe even with EU countries.
Well, I don't know. I think they'd have to negotiate with the EU, wouldn't they? They couldn't do it with the individual EU countries. I don't think that'd be allowed. But
exactly. So, I don't.
In the worst case scenario, if the UK just ends up going to the World Trade Organization level of tariffs, then the amount that the UK sort of makes, inverted commas, from pulling out of the EU in terms of its contribution actually nets out. So the cost of the UK, the cost of to the UK in tariffs is basically the same amount as the UK pays into the single market. So net-net, the worst case scenario of just going out, having no direct access to the single market and being outside, there'd be no direct financial difference. I'm sure there'd be other issues in terms of being outside the non-monetary issues, the ones you can't put but in terms of net numbers, it wouldn't be worse off financially. But I don't think it'll go to the worst case. I don't know what the middle ground will be, but I would, given that the UK is in the, and it's not actually a good position financially to be in that we import more than we export. It's just not a good thing for the country to be in anyway. But given that is the situation, it wouldn't be rational, I don't feel, for the EU to basically add tariffs that price the UK out of buying their goods. Now, maybe they will out of either emotion or just because it's the way the EU's got to be kept together. That maybe the price of holding the EU together would be for Germany and I think France
to make an example out of the UK.
Yes.
Somehow.
So there's other. Yeah. So if it's done through an example, that's that situation where maybe, you know, but if it's a rational situation, given that, yeah, given that one of the main claims for the Remain side has been the rational way they've looked at things, I would assume that in a rational world, the Germans and the French are not going to cut their nose off to spite their face. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe an example will have to be made out of the UK to stop other countries getting any ideas of leaving the EU. But from a rational perspective, it wouldn't make sense. It will cost, you know, cost Germany money, it cost the EU money. And given that the EU is going to be, whatever the amount the UK pays in, worse off,
but
that
then,
would only make things worse.
But then if you... Yeah, okay. I was going to talk about regulations and say that if you want to buy and sell from the single market, then you're going to be subject to the same regulations anyway, because you can't sell something without having it, you know, up to the standards of the regulations that apply in the EU. And I don't think people are going to manufacture two types of products, one for the UK and one for the EU when they're in the UK. That wouldn't make sense.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. See, the UK deals with the US and has to meet their regulations when it's selling into the US, and there's no trade agreement there. So, and the example, one example I could think of where people will manufacture for two different markets is in cars, left-hand side or right-hand drive cars. You know, there are companies will do it if they're going to make a profit out of it. If they're not going to make money out of it, they won't do it. But if it's to be made, it's worth doing. So I don't believe that they're suddenly going to close the market down to the EU because we don't have a standardized set of regulations on certain goods.
I guess so the other UK,
benefit in terms of regulations as well, like currently that the UK companies, even if they've got minimal exports to the EU, they still have to follow the regulations, even though they may be selling the majority of their goods to Asia, US, Africa, wherever. Outside of that, you know, if a company thinks it isn't financially worth their while to follow these regulations because the profit is too small in the EU, they can not do that anymore, cut down on whatever regulations they're having to follow, and maybe, you know, drop the cost of the goods they're creating and export them maybe even more. You know, the lower the cost of the goods, the more they're going to sell. So maybe the rest of the world will suck up the difference if it costs them less.
Okay.
Again, nobody knows for sure what the world's going to be like in 5 years' time. You know, both sides, neither side did. There are many. Everyone can project about what they think will happen, and it will all come from a certain bias. But I don't think. Sorry.
No, I just want to say I vehemently disagree with everything you're saying, but I have to admit, as much as it pains me, I don't think you're right, but I think it does make sense. It's not like this is that's probably a good thing. This is not the image that has been projected to me of the levers that I don't even understand how it's possible that you would think that. What I'm getting from you is somebody that I disagree with, but that we can have a conversation about why I think that's not the case and why they don't think that what I'm saying is the case. Already, you know, we're nearing the end of the thing, but I really want to thank you for that because it's kind of an educational experience for me. But I also want to talk about the leaders of the Leavers camp who have been, again, in my emotional reaction, scandalously, outrageously abandoning ship in the past couple of weeks. And it really feels to me like they're saying, oh, we used this argument for political gain. We never thought it was going to go through. Now, you know, we don't want to be the ones that actually do it because we didn't believe in it from the start. So toodaloo, have fun with the mess. Goodbye. I'm going back to the countryside. So that's my reaction as a Remain proponent. As a Leavers, do you think there's some of that? Or how did you... take the news of Farage and Johnson basically not going for the prime ministership?
Well, Farage couldn't have gone for the prime ministership. He's not part of the
party. But yeah, just leave it. Now was his time to actually go ahead and make his party matter. But anyway, go ahead.
Nigel Farage is, as I'm sure you're aware, massively despised in the UK by a large segment of people, and probably more so than any by a Conservative Party who are in power. There is no way, come hell freezing over, that they would involve Nigel Farage in the leave process. There's no way they'd have him on board, no matter how much he campaigned for leave and how much he's been the loudest proponent of leave, and you know, for the past 15-20 years, there is no way they'd have had him anywhere near it. Boris Johnson, I get the feeling you are correct in that he didn't think they were going to win. This was a political thing, so that after the vote, Cameron would probably have to go. It would increase his standing and maybe become leader. The reason I think he hasn't stood is because he realised he couldn't win, and there was no point in he wasn't going to get voted. His main ally, Michael Gove, basically turned on him and stood for Prime Minister himself. So there's no point in him winning, him standing. Gove hasn't cut and run. He lost. He tried to become Prime Minister to enact the vision. He's the only one, I think, who truly leave. He's the one I have most confidence in wanted to leave and wouldn't backslide on it. But he wasn't going to win. I don't think they've done a runner because they can't. Now the vote's in, they don't know what to do. I don't think any of them would have had any. They didn't have any say in what was going on. The one who had the best chance of actually being in a position to do anything, Gove, lost. I think David Cameron leaving is more of an example of cutting and running. I personally think it's disgraceful that David Cameron had no exit plan, because he's the only one who should have and could have had a realistic exit plan. The Leave side were not government. They're a cross-party member of Labour, UKIP, Conservative, and even some Greens. And they couldn't say, we're going to do this, because they're not in power. They couldn't do it. The only people who had any power to do anything if it was voted leave was the actual UK government who really wanted Remain. And they had no plan. And that's on them. That's not on the people making the case for leaving. That's on the cases who are running the country, who should have a contingency in place. But they were so complacent and sure they were going to win, they didn't even have anything in place.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say it was cutting and running. I think it was, in my view, he certainly used it for political gain. Obviously, he's the one who proposed the referendum, but he was for the Remain camp. But I think what happened was that he was trying to gain a little bit of time and get the 3 months that he could get and get the country to pull itself together in those 3 months. I'm not sure it was as, abandoning ship as maybe no one is abandoning ship. Maybe everyone is in this incredible situation that they didn't think was going to happen for most of them. And they're now trying to figure out how the hell to handle it.
To be fair, that's probably a bit unfair on Cameron to say he was kind of running, but I think
he doesn't want to any have to do with it. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it. That I would agree is.
And I understand. Right. I understand that. Well, in his position, I don't think anyone would trust. He couldn't be trusted. I'm not saying he wouldn't do his best job, but I think there'd be two. I think his previous trips to Europe to try and negotiate things haven't gone particularly well. So he's not really come back with anything that had any value. So I don't think he could have, he could realistically could have argued for the leave, the terms of leaving.
All right. Last question, and then I'll leave you alone and let you go and stop harassing you horrendously.
That's okay.
There's definitely a feeling that some people who voted leave, as I said, I think some of them were misled and some of them didn't understand exactly all of the consequences. Maybe they thought that some of it was definitely justified, some of it was not, but some of it they didn't realize. We've seen a few testimonies of people who just voted as to make a political point and to send a message to the establishment. Some people said that they didn't realize it meant they couldn't go spend their retirement in France in the house they had bought, you know, because they are going to need a visa and stuff like that now. Some silly and sad things, like people saying, I want to go with my dog somewhere. And they say, well, tough, you can't, because now it's not as easy to make a dog go. Anyway, these kinds of things. I think there's, old dogs aside, there's a lot of people who woke up the next day with a hangover in the leave camp. So first of all, two questions. First of all, do you think that's true, or is that a perception of the Remain camp? And second of all, if it is true, do you think that the referendum happening, a second referendum happening today, which is not going to happen, it's just a theoretical question, would that go the same way again? Would there be, wouldn't there be at least 2% or 5% of the people who changed their vote from the Leave camp?
Well, I think that's perception of the Remain side, in all honesty. Okay. I haven't, you know, again, speaking from anecdotal experience, I haven't met a single person who has anything other than, I don't know how to phrase it, ecstasy about the result. Most people who, you know, maybe I just, that's just who I know, but I don't know anyone who's had any misgivings. I know that, you know, I know there's stuff in the news, there are certain people who had misgivings, and yeah, maybe some people did not realize what they were getting. But then that seems to be the case in pretty much any democratic process. There are people who don't know what they're getting and they just vote for whatever their reasons are.
Well, it's usually not the most important question in 50 years. I think that's, you know, that's a little bit different. It's even more important. There is no more important political decision in any, you know, in the UK for sure, in decades. So I don't think it's fair to equate it to another, you know, an election, a presidential election or whatever, these kinds of things, right?
No, my point is, in any democratic process, this is going to happen. And there isn't, you're always going to have people who, there isn't anything you can really do about that other than not hold elections or the election. You know, like, I know the argument has been this is too big an issue to let people decide on. I'm obviously not in that, in that camp. I think it's a constitutional issue, which is when referendum are actually their most useful and when they should be held. Both sides were appalling in terms of their campaigning. None of them were, I don't think, of any value or use in the thought process. A lot of people went, I think, their instinct and gut instinct, which I believe is mainly a sovereignty thing, as I've said earlier. I think that's what it came down to. People had to make what is essentially a gut decision on it in a lot of cases. And, you know, some people, like I say, probably did vote thinking it wasn't going to win. I'm sure there's people who voted, you know, Remain, who thought things were going to be, or people who didn't vote at all, who thought just thought Remain were going to win. Well, yeah, it's, in terms of your question about whether it was held again, I think that somehow a second referendum was win. I actually think it would increase. Now, that's more my just guesswork, but based
you
on...
You think the Leave would increase?
Yes, okay. I do. I think there'd be a backlash against being asked to vote again, because one of the things that's always been thrown at the EU from the UK is how whenever a vote doesn't go the way the EU likes, people are made to vote again. And if they did that in the UK, I think that would get a backlash that would increase the Leave. Hmm. That's the gut feeling, but... You know, I know how people can get really get their backs up about something like that. If, you know, it's, I think asking to vote again would give, I think, the Leave people even more ammunition.
Okay.
To start, you know, like the French and the Irish situation on the Lisbon Treaty is the classic example that's used.
Yeah.
And if it happened, and that's why I don't think they'd hold it again, because, you know.
Yeah. No,
and the UK has been promised a referendum a number of times and by politicians and never got it. So to then, you know, after like 15 years of people saying we want a referendum, to then turn around and say, oh, you got the wrong answer, do it again. I think there'd be an absolute, you think people don't trust the establishment now, which I don't think they do, that would basically light a new fire under them, I think.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that has, as I was saying, it has been highly educational. So thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show and discuss these things with me, and hopefully educate a few other people other than me as well. Is there any place, anything you want to promote, anything you want to say, or are you happy just remaining anonymous? And
no, I have nothing to promote. Okay. I wish I did.
It was just a very valuable public service that you performed. So thank you very much. Very
yes,
much
I thought I needed a good attacking on social media, so I thought I'd come online and voice my probably not very popular opinions in the social media world.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for doing so. I definitely think we're all better for it. So that's going to be it for this small follow-up episode. This one is not part of the Patreon paid, quote unquote, paid episodes, but because I think it's a follow-up to the previous one, I think both of them together form kind of a whole, so I'm not going to make this one register on Patreon as well. However, if you think that there is some value to this show, if you think it's an interesting part of your month when it comes up, and if you think that you might be willing to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/thePhileas Club and become part of the wonderful patrons that make this show possible. I often say that, you know, this show is not a show to argue. I know we argue and discuss things on the show a lot, but I think the main value of the show is to listen to what people have to say, and ideally to listen to what people you don't agree with have to say. And too often in our world, in our, you know, social interactions in the media, it's either we listen to people that we agree with, or when people we disagree with say something, we're not really listening, are we? First of all, often because the way the media is structured, they're shouting, so it's hard to listen to. And also because we just don't like listening to things we disagree with. So hopefully in this show, we present things in a way that is interesting, entertaining, and fun and casual enough that you get a chance to hear from different people. That's the goal anyway. And if you think it does that a little bit, then I've accomplished my goal. So thank you very much for contributing if you do, and if you don't, thank you for listening. Again, the biggest thanks goes to Hayden. Thank you so much for being on the show, for willing to take that step, for taking the risk. And I hope you enjoyed the show, and whatever happens, we'll be back in a few weeks with another regular episode. My name is Patrick Beja. I'm not Patrick on Twitter, not Patrick on Facebook. And the show is available at FrenchSpin.com. Talk to you next time.